Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sports Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in sciences while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life.
Welcome to the new episode of PharmaSchool Life Sciences and Science Life podcast. Today, I would like to welcome Laurita Ghazi, a PhD student in the Department of Pharmaceutical Sciences. Hi, Laurita.
Hi, Hari.
Please tell us about yourself and what you are doing in your PhD.
So I'm a first year PhD student. I work in the Colm Lab. And we focus on alcohol use disorder. So my PhD research focuses on how a receptor to really break it down. So we are focusing on a receptor and its system in a brain region in the context of one disease. And the disease is alcohol use disorder.
That sounds very interesting. Could you break us down on the alcohol use disorder?
Yes. So alcohol use disorder, it is a chronic relapsing disease, and it is characterized by an impaired control of alcohol intake and a negative emotional state when the alcohol is not available for this person. Globally, there are 100 million people affected by this disease, and it causes 3 million deaths per year. So it's quite a big number. What is important to mention when we talk about alcohol use disorder, that it is not driven by any pleasure of these people. So these people have an excessive intake of alcohol. They also use it as a form of a self-medication. So alcohol is available in the supermarket, in Austria at least. You can buy it very cheap. You don't feel great. And then you just drink, and then again, you don't feel great because you drink so much. Then you undergo withdrawal when you don't have this alcohol available. You are again very stressed and feel bad, and then you drink again. So it's a cycle which you are very, what is the word? it is an addictive disorder. Yes. It's not driven by any pleasure. It is also important to understand that it is a chronic brain disease. When we talk about brain diseases, so there's an imbalance in neurotransmitters and neuromodulators in the brain. So it's not like people can treat alcohol use disorder by their willpower or, I don't know, just because they want to, but they really need professional help. So it is a really concerning disease, which not only affects the patient, but it affects our society. It mostly also affects the families of these patients. There are already existing treatment options for this disorder. So it's not like the past 100 years of research was not available and we are just starting it. But the problem is that even there are some treatment options, there is a huge gap. It's like one of the hugest treatment gaps of 78%. This is mostly because of stigma. A lot of people do not accept that they have this disorder, or they're not willing to share or to go to a doctor. Then also doctors question the effectiveness of those treatments. Also those patients have to stick to a strict medicational plan. And also if they get treatment, the problem is that those treatment options really vary in their effectiveness. So we really need to research or to develop more safer and better treatment options for these people.
When we talk about this in general, there are always a sex-specific different perspective when we are looking for some disease. So I would just ask that what is the perspective on like male and female of the effects of alcohol use disorder?
We do know from human epidemiological studies that there is a sex difference in women and men in humans, right? women are more vulnerable to stress-induced relapse, and they also progress faster to dependence compared to men. This has also been shown in the rodent models. We could show that there is a significant sex difference between male and female models.
So, Loretta, there is always an underrepresentation of sex when it comes to research related to alcohol abuse, pain, and other systems. Could you tell us why this underrepresentation exists and how it could be overcome?
Yes, so there has been historically, it has been historically neglected, this sex-specific research. And this is mainly because males are used as a standard, and the female cycle is because we, in females, you have to include the hormonal cycles, and in men, it's just more, I don't want to say it like this, but it's just more straightforward in detecting the side effects, and these are more influenced in women by their hormonal cycle. And I think it is still neglected, not just in the past year. So I'm very happy to be part of a sex difference research group.
Sounds very interesting. And this conversation about sex-related differences is always recurring. We even encountered this in our previous guests. So could you give us more information on the tools and the strategies, scientific context that you use in your research?
Yes. So we do mainly electrophysiology in our lab, and then try to prove our hypothesis or our results with further techniques. So I think we are the only one in the building who are doing electrophysiology. There is other electrophysiology labs in Vienna, of course. But here in the building, we do electrophysiology on oocytes, which are frog eggs. Yes, and we insert two electrodes mm-hmm. in this egg. And then, but before we have expressed the GABA-A receptor in the membranes of these oocytes. So we are telling, do that, the oocyte. So this is a very isolated technique. Then we apply a substance, a compound to this oocyte, and we see how fast the receptor opens, how long it stays open, and therefore we can tell how the compound acts on this receptor. This gives us information about the effectiveness of a compound and on which subregion it's acting. Then when we have tested for effective compounds, which are potent, we go into mouse brain model. Here we don't have this isolated receptor. We are testing the compounds on a synaptic level. So it's not just the GABA receptor, A receptor, it's the GABA B receptor. We also have other neuromodulators which are affected and then could mediate our receptor. So it is a very complex system. And this also tells us about how this compound act on a more enhanced model system.
That's a very broader perspective on electrophysiology. I hear the electrophysiology, which is one of the difficult techniques to proceed. Like in your case, what do you think that some of the main scientific or technical challenge when you are doing this specific research project?
I think electrophysiology is a very powerful technique. In oocyte, in this system, we do only an isolated receptor, but when we are in the mouse brain, the mouse is dead, but we are keeping these lysis alive. We keep them alive by artificial cerebrospinal fluid. And I think it's very powerful to record, like it is an ex vivo technique, but it feels like I can see what is happening right now in this neuron. And this is what fascinates me the most. It's like I sit there, I watch a neuron talk to me and how it tells me what is happening. So, and also it is a very long technique. So it's not like like when you do Western blots, you have like a whole week of procedures. But when you do electrophysiology, you sit there for like 8 hours, 10 hours, and you record, and you're like, just one more cell. I just want to do one more cell, and then I go home. But so it's a very exhausting technique, but it really is a powerful technique in context of getting results.
So next obvious question will be, what keeps you motivated?
Like every other PhD student, I do have my ups and lows. To do electrophysiology, you really have to be, you need to be a type of person to do it, because there are some days, yes, coming back to the Western blot, it's like you're very motivated. Maybe you start your second step, and at the end of the week, you have like a last step and it's not working. Then you are very frustrating. But there are like days before where you have like the feeling it could work. And with electrophysiology, you know immediately it did not work. So, and you try again the next cell, and it's like 8 hours. You did 8 hours and you had no reasonable results. And it's like, okay, I have to accept it. Tomorrow is a new day. And then you have like a week which did not go as planned. And at the same time, when it works, it's very rewarding. So you get very motivated. It's like, oh, it worked. It could work tomorrow again. So it's like, I'm also in a cycle. Yes.
I want to add this point here that she's also a Faunuspura student representative of doctoral students. So why you choose this, Laurita?
When I started my PhD, I really wanted to be part of this doctoral school, like be involved in decisions. But mostly, I really wanted to meet other PhD students and being part of something. I really have the feeling that, there are a lot of PhD students in the building. There are larger groups, there are smaller groups, and I am part of a smaller group. And so I just wanted to be part like of the school, and the school is like there are more students and colleagues, and I really want to be part of the decision making process. And so far we are two Faunuspura representative students. It's me and Isabella now. Sebastian retired. Hopefully will finish his PhD or did, I don't know. And so it's just us. And so far we had planned like two get-togethers, which had been very fun. A lot of PhD students came, and I just like being at the position of a host, because when I'm in a host position, I feel like I'm more involved and I trying to get everybody else involved. And when I'm part of as a guest, I just usually remain more at the background of the event. So it really has helped me to get in touch with other PhD students. And so far, I think we are a pretty cool PhD doctoral school. There is a network developing. A lot of PhD students come to our get-togethers, and when we see each other in the building, it's. I'm always happy to see another one in the building, even though it's such a big building. I never see any. When do we see each other, Harry? We never meet in this building. Yes. And also as a PhD, as a Faunuspura representative, student representative, we are also involved in decisions like when will the next retreat happen, mm-hmm. like which it just happened that we had to talk to the other nutritional and to other sports from the sports sciences, which date could be best for the retreat. So like just like basic organizing stuff, also help Isolde when she needs something like, okay, we need one more event at the retreat. Can you plan something? We try to do that. Yes.
Yeah. As you mentioned about retreat, what is retreat like? What are the need for retreat in our doctoral school, why we are doing this?
So far, I've only been at the last retreat, and I think it's important, even though it's just 2 days, we just get to know each other better. We don't only talk science and future plans and stuff, but we just get to know each other on a more personal level, which is also important in science, I guess. So we also understand what the others are doing. So we know from presentation, we know what they're, we know the umbrella topic, but so we just get to know each other better in a scientific way, in a personal way. And I think that has, yes, it has been very successful in the last retreat setting. We also wrote a welcome guide for new doctoral researchers. It's more like very broad, like where are the next restaurants, what are the next activities you could do around here, or also for students who come from abroad, what is UZI, and just explaining how this building is built, like two means not the floor, but the building, and like UZA 2E and stuff. It's just very general. And where are the next supermarket, so just that they get to know the infrastructure around here. And for the get-togethers, we are planning a new get-together, Isabella and me, and we would be very happy if more students would join us. It's always very much fun.
Yes.
And yes, it's always nice to meet each other and talk about our process and just get to catch up about the topics we talked about last time. Like, I'm doing this and that, and most of them then final, maybe also already submitted something. And it's just nice to celebrate those small happenings together.
Yeah, you forgot to add that there is a pizza always too.
Yes. We have to involve food and drinks. Yes, we want to involve. And they are also funded by the doctoral school, so which is nice. And I just remember why I really wanted to be a representative is because I like organizing parties. Yes.
And that's very, very nice that you are motivated, and also the doctoral school supports these kind of social engagements. I'm sure there are people who are considering to join, but they are still unsure as to why they need to join, you know.
Yes.
Do you have something for them to...
I mean, I don't want to blame anybody. I know there are already full in their time planning. Sometimes I also feel like, after work stuff, I am not sure. But, I mean, they don't happen so often. They're like once per semester at the max of 2 times. But I really don't blame anybody who's not coming. It's just nice to see a lot of people and just catching up. Yeah.
So we are at the end.
All the best to you, and we hope
Thank
to see
so
great results from your work.
Thanks so much, Hari and Sanjeev. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts, Ranjit and
Hari.
Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and expert contributions on how to navigate a career path of a young scientist.
This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sports Sciences. Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening. See you next time.